good people of Oakland, California, help me welcome W. Kamau Bell.
What's up, Oakland, California? There it is. There it is. Welcome to Kamau right now, live on KALW. We are here in downtown Oakland, California. And give it up for Martin Luther on music. Martin Luther. Not only are we live here at the New Parish in Oakland, but we are broadcasting live on KALW and streaming online to who knows where. I'm W. Kamau Bell, and tonight we're going to do what we do. We're going to have some conversations. We're going to get into everything that's happening right now in the world and in our lives. Like on the last show, I talked with UC Berkeley student Carol-Dean Makhzoomi, who got kicked off a Southwest flight for speaking Arabic, which has led to my own personal boycott of Southwest, unless it's cheaper, and for trips to L.A. But other than that, no more Southwest. Absolutely. You got to take a stand sometime. My guests tonight are filmmaker and spoken word artist Jamie DeWolf. Get over Jamie DeWolf, everybody. And one of my favorite Bay Area comics, Irene Tu. Get over Irene Tu. And author and professor of sociology at UC Berkeley, Nikki Jones. And later in the show, we're going to talk to Shane Bauer and Sarah Shured. Shane and Sarah, first of all, there's too many S's in there for my mouth, but we'll work on that. Shane and Sarah are famous for one of the last things you want to be known for, spending time in an Iranian prison.
And Shane Bauer, as many of you know, just...
not good at all. And Shane Bauer, as many of you know, just broke the lefty internet with an article in Mother Jones Magazine about how he spent 4 months as a guard in a private Louisiana prison. That's a funny thing to do. Yay! Yay for the article, not for the prison, right? Yeah, okay. And Sarah's new play, The Box, just opened in San Francisco, and it's all about solitary confinement. They're married, and tonight I'm going to spend the entire interview just asking, so what do you two do for fun? What happens when you're not taking down the prison industrial complex? Netflix and chill? Our guests tonight, maybe you want to talk about all the delicious food you've been having to eat your feelings, whatever you want to do. So let us know using the hashtag Kamau Now. That's Kamau, KAMAUNOW. All right, everybody. Woo, how you doing? So lots going on right now. I'll tell you what's going on with me. I just got nominated for an Emmy for my show, United States of America. That's the good news. And the rest of this show is bad news, but we got to start with some good news. I got nominated for a category I didn't know existed. It's but my show, United States of America, it's Best Unstructured Reality Program. I think that's just called life. I think that's what that is. It's just called walking around. Everybody's life is an unstructured reality program. Is this the season finale? Too soon. As I said, it's all bad news after this. What else is going on? I've been a little bit busy online trying to get the kids' TV show Doc McStuffins renewed. Anybody know Doc McStuffins? Seems like my audience. Everybody else, you got to watch Doc McStuffins. It's one of the best shows in the history of television, period. And I know you say, what do you mean one of the best kids' shows? No, one of the best TV shows. It's a show. It's on Disney Junior, but I don't like that. Shut up. Corporate, shut up. It's a show about a little black girl who's a doctor for her stuffed animals and toys. Yeah, did I just blow your mind? It's a cartoon, so that means my daughter, when she was born, the show first came out, and the show came on the air, so my daughter, the first doctor she ever saw in her life, after the one that, you know, mom, meh, but the first one she realized she saw was a black doctor on TV. A female black doctor, and Doc's mom on the show is actually a doctor too. Oh my God, Kamau, I can't take it. Is this real? Yes, it's real. And her dad on the show, black man, I don't know what his job is. Mostly he's in the kitchen cutting vegetables, but that's good too, right? You know, we don't see enough black men on TV cutting vegetables, do we? No. But it's totally changed my daughter's life and our family's life because it's a show on TV and they're about Disney Junior's about to cancel it. Not because it's getting bad ratings, just because they're done. just because they're just done with it. So and so that means that my daughter won't get to see the show and that future generations will have to see reruns, and it just sucks, man. And it's really important because, like I said, it was the first time my daughter has ever saw a doctor that was a black person, a black woman. That was her first doctor image. And here's why it's so powerful. She didn't grow up with the idea that doctors were white men. And what that means is that the first time we took her to a doctor and we sat her in the room and she got ready, she was excited. She's like, give me the otoscope, give me the stethoscope, give me the sphygmomanometer. I didn't know what that was till Dr. Stephens taught me that's what a blood pressure cuff is. And my daughters and doctors are all excited. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, this white man walks into the room. My daughter's like, She really looked like somebody's lied to you too. That's not a doctor. Doctors are either 6-year-old black girls or adult black women. This is not either one of those things. And the thing about that moment is that's when I realized how smart my daughter was, because she could have like had a tantrum or like started crying, but she didn't. She realized she needed to let us know that she wanted to leave without alerting the white man that something was wrong. Which is a very valuable technique for us oppressed people. And what she did is she looked at the doctor and looked at us and said, Mama, Dada, I'm sleepy. We should go. I'm really sleepy. Oh my God, I can't even tire. We'll have to do this doctor appointment when there's a black woman here, because right now I got to go to sleep. There's a lot going on right now. We're going to get into a lot of it later. But one thing that happened that affected, sort of a weird thing, it's a big news story, but also affected my life a little bit, is future President Donald Trump. Then do something about it. There's a way around that, actually. actually, leave here right now. Let's cancel the show and see if we can all do something about it. Future President Donald Trump recently, there was a leak, I guess, that announced who his VP choice is going to be. Yeah, Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana. Yay, Indiana. Wait, what? Well, see, that's my point. So, are you guys from Indiana up there? You're from Indiana. Well, you know what? I'll take the rest of the show from here. No, I'm just kidding. If you were closer, you come sit down here. White people move other ways than these black people sit here. I mean, no offense, but you know. I actually grew up in Indiana a little bit, and my mom is from Indiana and lives in Bloomington, Indiana right now, so I thought we could call her and find out what she thinks about it right now. Okay. Let's see what happens. See if she... I hope she's listened to the show. Oh, she's probably watching Game of Thrones.
Hello.
Hey, Ma, how's it going?
Fine.
You're live on KLW at the New Parish in downtown Oakland.
All right. Okay. That sounds good.
That sounds good. Were you listening to my show?
What? I like this show. Yeah.
Oh, you like this show? I'll put that in my bio. My mom says she likes this show. So, Ma, I wanted to call you with these people here because today the news came out that Donald Trump has picked your governor, Mike Pence, as his vice president and his vice president candidate. And I know you work in politics and you worked for Obama back in 2008. And then, 2012, you said do it your damn self, I believe. But what do you think of Mike Pence, Ma?
Oh, boy. We've had signs up for about the past couple of years saying Pence must go. So I think even the Republicans in Indiana will be happy if Trump takes him as his VP, because that means they can find somebody viable to run for governor.
So Indiana's gain is the rest of America's loss. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Exactly.
So you will not be... So what, Gay?
Because, you know, he's the guy who had the religious rights bill, which basically, he called it religious rights, but what it really meant is we give you the right to discriminate against LGBTQ based on your religious beliefs.
The Bay Area is not. The Bay Area is not with that. They just went, ooh.
Well, that's who he is. That's who he is. And the other thing he has keeps sponsoring, but they haven't passed yet, are bills to get all up inside a woman's body and tell her what she needs to do when she gets pregnant.
That is the best thing you've ever said, Ma. Yeah.
So what? That's who he is. That's the kind of governor he is.
Well, thanks for letting me call you, Ma. Can you say hello to everybody here at Kamau right now?
Hello, and thank you for coming to my son's show.
All right, Ma. I'll call you later.
You have a nice, enthusiastic audience.
Oh, thank you. I do. Yes. She will judge you later. She'll say, "I didn't like that audience." So, keep it up, everybody. All right, Ma. I'm gonna call you later. Okay.
Okay.
And I love you. And please never say the phrase "all up inside a woman's body" ever again. Thank you. Bye, Ma. I'll talk to you later. Give it up for my mom, everybody. All right, we have some amazing guests to help. Oops, that's okay. All right, we've got some amazing guests to help us talk about what's going on in the world right now. My first guest is an associate professor in the Department of African American Studies at UC Berkeley and the author of Between Good and Ghetto, African American Girls and Inner City Violence. Please welcome the incredible Nikki Jones. Thank you. Yes. I haven't seen you since we tried to take down a coffee shop. All right. That joke is who it's for. My next guest is an award-winning film director and the host and creator of the legendary longtime Oakland variety show, Tourette's Without Regrets. He's also related to one of the worst con men in the century, L. Ron Hubbard, and now I'm going to be sued. Please welcome Jamie DeWolf, everybody. Jamie DeWolf. My last guest is one of my favorite comedians. SFIS deemed her one of the top 11 comedians in the Bay Area, and top 11, that's how it works. And KQED Arts just named her a woman to watch. We will watch and listen to her tonight. Give it up for Irene Too, everybody. Irene Too. Well, thank you for coming, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can talk into the microphone anytime you want to.
All up in Oakland.
So I like to start out by finding out what's going on with each person right now. Irene, I hear you've been you've been one of those people who's all up in Pokemon Go.
Well, I've been trying to figure it out because it came out like last week and now everyone's playing it. And I kind of don't get it. But I've kind of bonded with random strangers trying to figure out this game.
Now, for these people who have children, jobs, and responsibilities, please tell us what Pokemon Go is.
I'm not sure. Well, everyone's playing.
Because when you say everyone's playing, and I'm like...
Well, I saw this dad on the street in Berkeleyton. He was definitely really into the game and, like, way more levels deep than I was. But if you don't know what it is, it's this game that's on your phone you can download, and it's like an augmented virtual reality game, and it, like, uses your GPS on your phone, and you, like, walk around, and, like, you go and find Pokemon. And then when you find one, you, like, catch them with the Pokeballs, and it uses your camera, so it kind of sees where you are in the world, and you catch the little Pokemon. It's really complicated to explain, but when you play, you're like, oh, that makes sense, in a way that also doesn't make sense. But
so this is basically what Edward Snowden warned us about. This is Edward Snowden's like, they're going to turn into a game, everybody.
It's like a fun game, and they're totally collecting all our data right now.
So are you playing?
Oh, yeah, I'm playing. But my phone...
Are there any
I mean, they have all
here?
My data. There's. I didn't find any Pokemons here. But this is a Pokestop, so you can get Pokeballs here.
Wow.
You spin the little spinny thing, and then you get little items. It's kind of fun.
Professor Nikki Jones. I just feel like I want to bring you into this. Have you played Pokemon Go?
I have not.
What are your thoughts on this idea of this Pokemon game?
You know, Irene was just explaining it to me in the room back there. It sounds fascinating, way for people to get together, people to do things together and alone at the same time.
Exactly. You know?
The best way to do it in the 21st century, alone at the same time,
exactly.
With other people that you're not looking at.
Yeah.
Jamie, have you played Pokemon Go?
I have not. I actually had to research it when I saw it as your right now subject. I know it's sweeping the nation. And did you know, because it checks you in to local spots, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know that Auschwitz just had to ban it? There are people playing Pokemon Go at Auschwitz, and Auschwitz had to politely make a new ban of you cannot catch Pikachus here at Auschwitz because... And that's actually happening at a lot of other historical sites where they're
at the Holocaust Museum.
Yeah, this is not the appropriate place to throw your balls at the animated deal. However, I hear it's good for exercise.
Yeah, I actually walked a mile today looking for.
I don't understand. Pokemon. Does it just drive you to find them? Like it's just creating fictional, pixelized things that make you hunger to go in directions?
No, there's like little spots, and you just like kind of search for them. So it's just like walking around Berkeley, like, and then it's kind of cool because at the Pokestops they'll be like, oh, this is like a landmark. So then you're like learning. Learning.
So the idea is that somebody's like, I got to go to this address to get this Pokemon. Oh, the Holocaust. This is interesting.
Does it give you facts about where you're at?
Not really. It's just like a photo, and then it just tells you what it is.
So you just spin in circles trying to catch this animated thing in the...
Yeah, kind of. But it's like if a Wikipedia had a Wikipedia version, like that's what you're learning.
Wow, okay. A Wikipedia version of Wikipedia, which is just the dude going, I heard one time.
Yeah.
Before we continue.
So in Oakland right now, though, where is the closest, like, Pokemon? Where are the Pokemons to catch?
Jamie wants to know. He's like, I got to get on this.
I mean, they're like, there's probably one, like, two blocks over.
Don't tell people that. Those people will leave right now. But hold on, before we continue, Jamie, it has led to lots of news stories, like the thing you're saying about Holocaust Museum and the Holocaust Museum. Please stop catching Pokemon here. We don't like it when anybody's caught here. Two men reported robbed and carjacked while playing Pokemon Go at Northern California Park. Pokemon Go players fall off 90-foot ocean bluff. Pokemon gone. Wyoming teen stumbles on dead body while playing Pokemon Go. Indiana Animal Shelter enlists help of Pokemon Go players to walk dogs. So there's two sides to every story, everybody.
I can't wait for the next Oakland protest where people are like, hold on, Black Lives Matter, but wait,
That's what Black Lives Matter should do. There's a lot of Pokemons right now on the bridge. Everybody get to the Bay Bridge. There's a lot of Pokemons there. So after that horrible nonsense about Pokemon... Jamie, this seems like a good segue. You believe the world is coming to an end.
I grew up Christian, and my grandmother, she went to Israel, and she picked a flower from the field of Armageddon. And I think a lot of people don't realize that Armageddon is a real field. It's an actual place where they believe that the Antichrist is going to march. And there was something so visceral and real about me seeing that flower and her picture standing in that field that it made the apocalypse so real to me forever, for the rest of my life. But now I feel like we're locked in an end game where you have major religions that are all apocalyptic in base. They're all fighting against each other. And we're getting to a point where we're actually driving to an end that I think that apocalyptic thinking is part of the problem. I think it's the fact that we don't have to fix anything because at some point Jesus is going to come down and just slay all the infidels. And, you know, so it's like it's just a very easy logical loophole to not have to actually treat the planet with any care, to not have to actually fix anything. I almost think it's like the same way we view with, like, what's going to happen with police these days, like martial law. Well, like, that's only going to last. Even if they went that way, it's only going to last for so long. There's a point where you have to have a third act. And I think that the apocalyptic mindset, which every American politician pretty much you can't get elected if you're an atheist, you know what I mean? So you all have to subscribe to this narrative end. And I don't know if you all read the end of the Bible, but it does not end well on Earth. So I'm wondering if it's getting to a point where we're making a self-fulfilling prophecy. And if no one's standing around and just admitting that and being like, there's a point where our great-great-great-grandchildren, you know, they're not going to... Mike Tyson had this great quote saying that humans
are... That's something you don't hear every day, but yes. Continue, sir.
The deacon, Mike Tyson, he had this great quote saying humans are a funny species. He's like, we think that we're going to be privileged enough to see the end of the world, and I don't think we're actually going to have that privilege. And there's something really haunting to me about that it's almost easier to just imagine that everything is going to end in your lifetime and growing up being terrified of the Antichrist and everything else, and that we get in this Donald Trump rhetoric and everything else, it's all marching towards the evil forces are mobilizing, the forces of the righteous, and, you know, at a certain point, but you don't have to fix anything because that's God's problem, you know what I mean? But
yeah.
I think that's part of the problem is that it's our problem, you know what I mean? And we have to take care of the planet. We can't just give it to God or deities, you know what I mean? And
no,
you
I hear
fix
you.
It.
I think more people would be clapping right now if halfway through that you hadn't said Mike Tyson had a good
Mike
quote.
Tyson. Mike Tyson had words of wisdom from Mike Tyson.
I'm also wondering, where did you stumble across that? Did you hang out with Mike?
I've been on some weird Mike Tyson documentary kick lately. I don't know what it is.
I've been there.
You gotta watch something when you're at the treadmill, you know,
we'll
Netflix
Antichrist and you're like, I gotta take a break. Gotta go watch some Mike Tyson.
Antichrist, Mike Tyson, they know each other, you know?
Yeah. He endorsed Trump apparently. So Professor Nikki Jones.
Yes.
I just want to call you Professor Nikki Jones. Is that all right?
Thank you. This is great. I should have my classes in a bar. It means a lot of people.
Oh, yeah. School's in session, everybody.
Yeah,
school's in session.
Wonderful.
So this is we're going to segue into the big thing that's going on this week because your job, part of your job is to do research on police civilian violence on video, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you just got back from vacation.
I did.
Have you read the news recently?
I did. I peeked at it a couple times when I was away, but it's really hard. You know, my partner and I were talking about this, and there's no vacation from being black, you know?
Yes.
No vacation from being a professor, particularly when you study things like this. It just keeps on coming.
So what, I guess the big question is, and we can, you know, segue into what I've been thinking about, is like, what do you think, and I'm asking everybody this question, mm-hmm. what does good policing look like in America? What does it take shape? What are the police? I mean, you can do whatever you want. What do they wear? I feel like they should all wear pink for a while, just to get out of that whole blue mentality. What does it look like in America?
Well, people are doing a lot of things to try and get good policing, and one of the things that people want is fairness. They want to feel like the police are impartial. They want to feel like they aren't treating them a particular way because of who they are, and situations like we saw over the last week make it really difficult for people to believe in that. And typically when it comes to violence, people want to feel like the police are acting in a way that is warranted and restrained. When it seems unwarranted and unrestrained, then it seems illegitimate, right? And that is what we've seen. We've seen a lack of trust, the level of trust in the police go down because people don't think that they're using force in a legitimate way. And that's the real crisis.
Absolutely. Jamie, what do you think?
I think a huge part of it is always accountability. I think the fact that someone literally live streamed being shot by a police officer, I think that, as horrific as that is, I think that has really going to change a lot of culture. I think what's going to happen now is more people when they get pulled over are going to start blasting it live right away, which I encourage everybody to do because it's accountable. You're holding that police officer accountable. And I think that what you're seeing more and more is all of these shootings and black men being murdered by police officers is absolutely nothing new. This is not a growing epidemic. It's just being captured on film and easily traded through social media and causing immediate outrage. You know, I mean, 50 years ago, you could just throw someone's body in a river and you never talked about it. And that's what would happen over and over and over again. And I think it's always important for people to remember that police, there's nothing noble per se by being a police officer, that ever since the gangs in New York, police officers were literally a hired gang by the city. You had multiple gangs and you hired one gang that the city stood behind and gave resources to go, you know, mess up and beat up all the other gangs in the city so that the city could somehow move forward. But it's always been just literally a show of force. You know, and I think that having a too much of a liberal mindset, what I've seen with a lot of Occupy, just getting rid of police altogether, it's that you can't get rid of homicide investigators. I mean, there are police officers that do the horrible work of trying to catch pedophiles and serial killers and you know, people who are, there are wolves all around in the world, and someone has to be able to fight them. However, it's that the systemic, police officers are fingers on a fist. So the larger question is that what is that fist swinging at? And if that fist is swinging unduly on one specific type of person over and over and over again, then, I mean, it's the entire fist has to change. You have to completely change those dynamics. And, I mean, drug laws, for one, absolutely need to shift. And, I mean, in a way, it should be so unbiased that instead of profiling, being able to profile and get away with that, it should almost, like, be an context where it's even more on the police officers of them having to state, why did you pull this person over? You know, and there's not really accountability. Yeah. You know, and I think that if you film everybody all the time, police officers all the time, because they are supposed to serve you. They're servants of your laws and enforcing your laws. I think that that is at least a step in the right direction.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, what Jamie said, but also I think we should...
That was the greatest segue ever. What Jamie said, but actually...
I think it'd be nice if one day they all went, all the cops went to sleep, they woke up the next day and their gums were replaced with swimming noodles.
So that, now this is what I was talking about. Some radical reform.
So, you know, they can't shoot anybody for like a day. You just like hit them with the little noodles.
Hey, guys, stop it.
You know, I did a tour in London last year, and there was a latest rash of shootings by police officers. And I'm in a bar in London, and they asked me, they're like, what's wrong with you Americans? One of your cops says, give up your guns, like our police officers over here. It's so hard for us to get guns. And the problem is it's too late. You can't, if every police officer turned in all of their guns tomorrow, there's too many guns in America and it's too late. We have a problem where there's so many guns proliferating everywhere that how do you counter that? You know what I mean? And it's just a really tricky situation.
I apologized on behalf of the Chinese people for inventing gunpowder.
Someone new to blame.
Someone new to blame.
Can someone tweet that to Trump right away? China, right? Yeah. You know, it's great.
But he's going to get wrong. We need to go after Irene, too, who invented gunpowder. That's what he's going to do. It's all right. So a friend of the show who's on our very first Kumar right now, Nato Green. Yes, Nato Green, everybody. Yes. He tweeted this out after the thing in Dallas. Obama spoke in Dallas at the cop's funeral. Remind me how many funerals he attended of black people killed by police. # Black Lives Matter. And that's the question, too, because I did notice, and I'm going to swing it right back to Professor Nikki Jones. We're in the home stretch of black president. I've said this before, there's a sense of him right now, like he does feel like a senior who has all the credits to graduate and sort of just hanging out and having a good time now and really letting it fly, telling his professors what he really thinks.
Yeah.
What kind of pressure can we put? What can we expect from him? What do you think? How do you think this is going?
Oh,
any of it?
Yeah. So part of what you're saying is that, you know, he only has a few months left. We would think like that the true Obama would emerge, right?
Yes,
and the true Obama
yes.
that's down with black people would emerge, right?
Yes.
I don't think that's going to happen because I think we see the true Obama, and the true Obama is a pragmatist, and he sees the role of the protesters, but he also sees the importance of policy and changing practices, and that's where he's going to be. I think that once he finishes up, he's probably going to put a lot of support behind young people, go back to the community organizing roots that he had, but I don't think that people are going to get the kind of show, that we are going to get the kind of show from Obama that many black people want.
But what would it cost him to go to a funeral of like an Alton Sterling or a Philando Castile?
Do we know that he's never done that?
Yeah.
He's never done that?
Yeah.
I feel like some black person here would remember. It's like we have a good
guy right in the front row. Literally.
Yeah.
Hell no, like, no, never happened.
I feel like Fox News would have exploded if it had happened. But I know. Yeah, he's never. Not that we. Anybody. If anybody can fact check us out there in the Twitterverse,
I mean,
let us know.
He went to Ferguson, though, right?
And I mean, but he went to the city of Ferguson. He didn't go
right.
to.
No, I understand. I mean,
oh,
I mean,
he went to. But that was not a police matter.
It was not a funeral.
That was a state sponsored white guy who was not a police, but it was not a funeral. Thank you, my one friend up in the corner, Jeremy, for laughing at that.
The thing to me that's terrifying about what happened in Dallas is. At the end of the day, I think murder's murder. And I think that America always has a problem with that, is that, you know, the amount of people that died in 9/11 compared to the amount of people that died in Iraq, at what point is murder murder? You know what I mean? If someone gets shot, if it's a child, if it's an American, if it's Iraqi, no matter what color they are, it's murder's murder. However,
but that's the problem, is that it's if it's state-sponsored, then it's not murder.
And the idea that the Nazi parties were brilliant at this, and you see it happen over and over, is that it's about making people into an other. Once you're able to distance yourself from humanizing them, and you see it happen immediately, instead of talking about Americans, you're talking about Muslims. Instead of talking about Iraqis, you're talking about terrorists, or you're talking about, you know, insurgents. It's always an other. And when you're able to get away with that labeling, well, the problem is with this shooting in Dallas is now police forces have an excuse to wear as much body armor from head to toe, to come in fully armed, because they said, we're at war. So if anybody wants to protest police killing citizens, that police would be like, your citizens are now killing us. So it escalates things even further to a point where the conversation is going to become even more difficult.
I mean, I feel like, first of all, I hope you say this at the white people meeting, when you go to the white people meeting. Because I feel like that's another problem. White people need to have these conversations with other white people. So right. Jamie, I hope you're taking that the next time you go to the white people meeting.
Well done.
Yeah, yeah. Because I think that's the other problem. My problem is, and then we have to move on a little bit, but is that I feel like the thing that is happening now is that cops are walling themselves off from regular society by calling themselves a community. Mm. You know, like they say, the police community, the police officers, it's
blue lives. Creating,
yeah, you know, blue lives
a
matter.
Separate life, almost.
Yeah, blue lives matter. Yeah, we know blue lives have a pension. We know blue lives matter. Black people don't get pensions unless they have a job that gives them a pension. But I think that sort of creates this dichotomy of like it's the police versus the black community, mm-hmm. when it's the police should be a part of the black community. We're paying their tax dollars. Mm-hmm. And whenever I hear cops, I respect police. I think we need police. An uncle who's police is what every black person says to criticize the police. I like police. I saw police. I never listened to that NWA song. I feel like you have to make this big... is that when I hear police complain about how hard the job is, I want to go, then you shouldn't have taken the job.
You got to wonder how many police officers wish that they were just a goddamn firefighter. Nobody hates firefighters.
Yes, yes.
Oh, everyone loves
that's because people are sure...
Everybody's racist against fire. You know what I mean? Yeah, they're like, get that fire, burn it, get it. You know, and they're like, should have been a firefighter. What the...
Yeah, I just feel like you don't... The complaining about the job is the thing that really sort of like... Because I feel like... If the job is that hard, then you shouldn't have the job. Because anybody who thinks their job is hard and always talks about how their job is hard should have an easier job. And I feel like, I mean, if you go into get surgery and the surgeon's like, this job is hard, you're like, uh-oh, all right, let's... we've all had that moment where you walk into a Starbucks and the barista's like, oh, and you're like, all right, go next door.
Yeah, you don't want your dentist opening your mouth and be like, how many more goddamn teeth have I seen in my life?
Another white tooth. But sometimes you have to find some sunshine in the middle of all this, and this is something that happened in the middle of this horrible this week. That was a clip that went around the internet that, for people at home listening, I will annotate the clip. It is from the Dallas Memorial Service, and it is George W. Bush during the Dallas Police Memorial Service. It's Obama and Michelle. Michelle Obama's holding George W. Bush's hand. She's not happy about it. George W. Bush is rocking back and forth more than everybody else. Just happy to be on TV again.
Did he not get the memo to wear black?
And he's wearing a blue suit because Laura Bush is probably like, don't. Oh, look, now he's shaking it. He's swinging Laura Bush's hands and Michelle Obama's hand. Michelle Obama looks like, I will kill you. Like, please stop. I think they need to check his urine because he looks like he's had a couple. And he's swinging and he's pointing at people. He's total. Oh, George W. Bush. Give it up for our future former president, everybody. So happy to be on TV. Well,
He looks like a wax museum. Wax museum statue that just got its life back. It's like, how do I move again?
It's the Tin Man. He just got some oil in him. If you just tuned in, this is Come Out Right Now on KLW Live from the New Parish in Oakland. I'm W. Kamau Bell, and I've been speaking with Irene Tu, Jamie DeWolf, and Nikki Jones. It's time we check in on what's happening with our social media desk, what's happening on Twitter with you and the live audience. Please give it up for our tweet wrangler, Becca Hoekstra, everybody. Becca Hoekstra.
Hi, everyone.
So, Becca, what's going on out in the Twitterverse?
We're starting off with one of our guests, former guests, Nina Joyner at Fillmore510. Summons by Blacksit to leave the U.S. if Trump is elected. In case anyone needs sex toys, order online.
I like that. It's a Blacksit means we all black people leave the U.S. Also, take some sex toys with you while you're at it. You
know. It's walking distance. Get yourself a dildo.
That's right. We can all go to. We should all go there after the show. We should just all go get some sex toys after the show. It's right around the corner. What else we got?
At Bitchin' Boutique, and I did check, I can say that on the radio. Right now, I'm watching Trainwreck, and I'm pissed that LeBron is so GD funny. Athlete, good looking, and funny? Seems unfair.
First of all, I know Golden State has some feelings about LeBron James right now. Last time we did the show, the Warriors were in game six. Now they're in the game nothing. But then we went out and decided to sign Kevin Durant, everybody. How do you feel about that? Team video game. But unfortunately, they don't have enough money to get another player, so I'm starting at center next year, everybody. In the post, a guy who doesn't know how to play the post. Kind of like Anderson Varejao. All right, so let's... Too soon?
Yes, I love this, yes.
This one is our last one from at Aiden Neumeister. This happened just a minute ago. This is happening right now, and it's a billboard. Love Trump's hate, end homophobia, and it's Donald Trump and Ted Cruz just making out.
I love it. I love it in the worst way. It's like watching a snuff movie, but I mean, it's
where did they put this up?
They put it right by the Republican National Convention, from what I understand.
Oh, nice.
To make every penis shrink in a 10-mile radius.
Well, no, some of those penises will be like, oh, gee, I didn't know I felt this way. Some of those penises will come out of the closet at that point. Give me feelings. Well, I want to thank it up for giving up for our guests, everybody, Nikki Jones, Jamie DeWolf, and Irene Too. As well as our tweet wrangler, Becca Hoekstra. We're going to have all these people back later. Keep those tweets coming at hashtag come out now. And now it's time for a little music. Give it up for Martin Luther, everybody. Martin Luther.
A 25 years of life and he's gone. Look where he is now. Who's going to help take care of home? To the court, yes. Look where she is now. Will the judge take her only son? Who knows where? To the world you might be one person, but to that person you might be the world. You are somebody's superstar. Somebody's superstar. You are somebody's superstar. Ooh. Who's gonna help her raise them kids and make them feel special? Yes, even though daddy ain't around. But to that person, you might be the world. You are somebody's superstar. Somebody's superstar. You are somebody's super. You are somebody's super. You are somebody's superstar.
Martin Luther, everybody, Martin Luther. Again, I'm W. Kamau Bell, and this is Kamau Right Now on KALW. We've heard from Twitter, but let's hear what's happening with the people right here at the new parish in Oakland. Please welcome our audience emissary, Jeremy Dalmas.
Hi, everyone. How's it going? Can you guys hear me?
Can we speak again?
Hello.
Hello. I don't have to tell you he's white after that voice.
We have all people have all sorts of things going on. Our first card is from Denise in Oakland, who says, I want a new job, but I have an afro and I'm from Palo Alto.
Oh, my God. I don't have to ask who it is. I just looked off the stage. That is more than an afro. That's a political statement right there. Good for you. So you want a new job. Hold on. Let me come down there. Let's get in this. All right. So Denise, can I sit on your lap? Just kidding. So tell me, you live in Palo Alto?
I'm from Palo Alto.
Where do you live now?
I live in Oakland.
And you need a job?
Well, I want a new job, but when I look around and I look at all of the beautiful staffing pictures, I see a very casting that's similar.
What?
It doesn't look anything like me.
What do you do?
So I'm currently working in social services, but I wanted to go into HR. So I'm looking that I want to put my LinkedIn photo on, or do I want to have straight, beautiful hair? Do I want to have an afro?
Oh, so you're wondering, do I put my real photo on there?
Yeah, because I have a very non-black name, Denise DeLon. So, so therefore,
so when you submit the resume, it sounds like white meat Whitey McWhiterson.
Exactly, but then they go, look at you. Are you Denise? Yes, I am.
Oh my God!
But
so,
should I?
So you're asking
afro?
If you should fry it and dye it and lay
I
down
not
to the side.
Have the afro.
Okay, let's do this by audience vote. Should she for her photo on LinkedIn, should she leave it natural? So first of all, let's ask. Should she fry it, dye it, and lay down to the side?
No.
Or leave it natural?
No.
Well, then that means somebody here has to help her get a job.
Then you gotta
all right?
hire me.
Yeah, then Denise, right here. Talk to her after the show.
HR
give it up for Denise,
position.
Everybody. Denise. Don't just talk about it, Oakland. Be about it. You gonna let if she wants that beautiful hair? I gotta help her get a job. What else is happening?
This is from Jackie and Hayward. I was supposed to get married next week, but I broke off the engagement, and I'm going through the breakup. Both happy and sad, it's over. I'm really leaving. I can't read this. Sorry. Sometimes there's
probably because it's stained by tears. So wait, Jackie from Hayward? Where are you? Oh, Jackie from Hayward, I'm coming down, Jackie. You can get a hug, Jackie. Come here. Oh, girl, it's gonna be all right. How?
Oh.
Okay,
hi.
Yeah, you got a microphone.
I got a microphone. Should I sit?
It's fine. What? Oh. So you were supposed to get married last week?
Next week. It's supposed to happen.
It's supposed to happen.
Well,
but
it's not happening. I mean. I don't know.
How long were you with this person?
Like 5 years.
Oh.
Okay, so 4.5. All right.
Yeah. Oh, okay, that's fine. That's fine. That's not a big deal. It was only 4.5 years, everybody.
Half.
Calm down.
Yes.
It's only 4.5 years. And it's just over. It's over. It's not the end of the second act in the romantic comedy.
Yeah.
It's the end of the third act in the Shakespeare play.
Yeah, exactly.
And what do you feel? Is there any sense that you feel good about?
I mean, it's bittersweet. I have crappy handwriting, so that's why it didn't show.
Don't apologize. Just be here with us.
Yeah.
So there's some sweet in there?
Yeah, there was. It was like freedom, and then it was like, oh shit.
It was like, oh freedom.
I'm like, oh, I'm 31.
No, something. No, it's just you're.
Kind of, yeah. I'm getting there.
You're a nice person. I feel bad. Is there anything I can do for you? Is there anything?
You can be my comedy coach.
Be your comedy coach?
Yeah, because I did stand up for a minute, and then I moved to England so I could be with him, and then I came back, and I'm all, and then now I'm like, where's my creative self?
Okay, use your pain.
Use my pain.
Okay, use your pain. Here's what I'll do for you. I will meet with you 4 times to talk about being your comedy coach. Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Yay!
So we can also just cry.
Let's cry together.
We can just share pints of ice cream and cry.
Okay.
What do you want to do?
All
so
right.
we'll do like a month of comedy coaching. All right. All right. Thank you. Give it up, everybody. Now it's time for my favorite part of the show, everybody.
It's an awkward talk. With W. Kamau Bell.
I hate getting out blacked on my own show. Thanks a lot, Martin Luther. You took it to the Barry White level. This is the part of the show where we get into the things that are on our mind that we don't always feel comfortable talking about, or maybe that when we talk to inappropriately with people on planes, like when I went to Jackson Hole on Monday. All right. This next couple made the news way back in 2009. This is our first time we're talking to a married couple during the awkward talk, all right? They were hiking near the Iranian border, captured by Iranian border guards, accused of espionage. I know, I'm not even done. This woman said, oh my God.
They were captured at the Iranian by Iranian border guards, accused of espionage, and spent over a year in prison. Wait, there's more. He, Shane, recently spent 4 months as a private prison guard in Louisiana, wrote about it, and it's the cover story in the current issue of Mother Jones Magazine. Please welcome Shane Bauer. Thank you, Shane. And she, Sarah, is a journalist and activist against the overuse of solitary confinement. She wrote a play titled The Box, which just opened at Z-Space in San Francisco. Go see it, everybody. Please welcome Sarah Sherwood, everybody. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having us.
Oh, please, yes, yes. So, yeah, it's on. It's happening. We're on the radio right now, talking about being on the radio.
I have to tell you, a couple hours ago, I was like, why did I agree to do something called an awkward talk with my wife in front of a live audience?
No, seriously, I think it's going to be a really long car ride home.
Well, if it's not a long car ride home, I haven't done my job. I just got to tell you. Well, I got to admit, I was like, we were like, because you did my other podcast, Political Reactive, and we were like, let's have one come out right now. And I was like, well, we just had him on Political Reactive. It was like, he'll bring his wife, Sarah. I was like, oh, then let's do that. I can make that awkward. That's good. So thank you for making my dreams come true. So, Sarah, I want to start with you, because this guy over here just wrote this article in Mother Jones Magazine about spending 4 months in a Louisiana private prison as a prison guard. Give it up. But I want to talk to you, because he's getting all this attention for that. But I want to know, what is it like to be married to a guy who says, I'm leaving the Bay Area and flying to Louisiana to be a prison guard for an undeterminable amount of time?
I know I should have prepared this question.
Oh, that's all right. I mean, because I know you went to visit him, right? You went to...
Like, what's weird for others is, like, normal for us. Like, we've been through a lot of intense things together. It's just made us stronger. It's brought us to a new level.
All right. So you're saying, he goes, I'm thinking about being a prison guard for 4 months. You're like, hey, we were in Iranian prison together. Go do your thing, baby. Go do your thing.
I mean, of course, I was concerned. We talked a lot about, you know, what's the red line? When are you gonna decide this is too much and we're going to stop? And what if we have a different red line, and how does that work out? I mean, it gets pretty deep.
Wait a minute. I feel like I just learned a new marriage technique. The red line, is that a thing? Did you guys invent that? I get what it means. It means the point at which you feel uncomfortable. Is that some Bay Area thing I'm unaware of, the red line? Can you buy those at farmers markets? What is that? So did you guys have the same red line?
I don't think that was ever really determined. I think.
Yeah.
I think
Can kept getting kicked down the road.
Circumstances sort of took over, yeah.
So I when I talked to Shane last...
I mean, I said if I got stabbed, I would not go back after that.
My red line is at stabbing. All right. I have a very similar red line. So when I talked to Shane about this before, he said that when you went out to visit him in Louisiana, that you told him that you noticed he was changing. What were you noticing in him that was changing?
What was I noticing? I mean, I think it's more like we all have maybe like the inner dictator, the part of ourselves that's kind of a jerk. And certain circumstances bring that out. I mean, not that he was jerk to me.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we made that time really special together. It was like candlelight dinners every night. It was wonderful. We're really good at that, at like turning that off. But I mean, I think I would have been way more of a jerk as a guard than what Shane was. I would have. I have no doubt about it. That like in that situation, you know, you are just trying to survive, and people are trying to get at you in every place they can, every mm-hmm. weakness, you know, every point of trigger.
Yeah, and so Shane, and you were there for 4 months, but it just happened to be 4 months because you felt like, what I understand, that the heat was on at 4 months, like you were getting too much attention.
Well, my work partner got arrested. He came down. He was shooting video and got arrested outside the prison, so he was in jail for 24 hours, and when he got out, we packed up and bounced.
And what do you mean by was it? How did you get out?
Like the three of us, me, James, West, and Sarah. I mean, when he was in jail, Sarah actually called his phone because I was sleeping. I was supposed to go to work the next morning, and James didn't come home. And she called his phone, and the sheriff of Winfield, Louisiana, answered, and said he was in jail. And so you know, we've got a hold of lawyers and stuff. And when he got after that moment, we basically packed up anything that had to do with CCA and the my reporting, and we went to a hotel because we didn't know if they would come and try to arrest me. And when he got out, we just like packed up the apartment and drove to Texas. And it was weird. We were all in the truck, and it was like none of us ever imagined that if we ever wanted to flee a state, that we would be driving to Texas.
That's so great. We got to get to somewhere safe, Texas.
We keep thinking about that Thelma and Louise quote. It was like, if you're running from the law, the last place you want to go is Texas.
Oh my God! And you're like, let's get to Texas. Let's get to Texas. Yeah. That tells you where Louisiana is on the spectrum of bad. Is there some Texas out there getting upset?
Oh, sorry. You know, it's real though that I think that like the fact that we were in prison together. I mean, we went through situations of tension that were unimaginable to us before that. I mean, we moved to the Middle East together. I think that we know how to deal with you know, high intensity, high stress situations really well.
So, and I think one of the most fascinating parts about your story is that when you applied to Louisiana prison, you actually put on the application that you worked for Mother Jones Magazine, right?
I put down that I worked for the Foundation for National Progress, which is the parent company of Mother Jones Magazine. I said that I wrote about criminal justice. And,
and so now we know all they look at on the application to be a prison guard in Louisiana is, can you be here tomorrow? That's all they...
Actually, when I did the interviews, you know, they asked me kind of generic questions like, how do you work with others and that kind of thing. And the only question they asked that had anything to do with the prison, they didn't ask me why I wanted to work in a prison, anything on my job history. The only thing that had to do with prison was, what is your idea of customer service and how does that apply to inmates?
Because prison guards are in the customer service industry?
Wow. And in training, the guards... sometimes referred to the prisoners as customers. And I was like, that's not really...
They're
paying to be here.
No, because with the way they're treating them in prison, it feels like they're not customers. They're more like McNuggets than the way they're being treated. So, Sarah, you have a play right now at Z-Space in San Francisco that runs through July 30th, The Box. Everybody go see it. Go see it. You visited 13 prisons around the country researching for this. And there's a character in your play who has been in solitary confinement for 19 years. Mm. Is that based on a real person?
Yep. It's based on Herman Wallace, one of the Angola Three. I was given 50 hours of interviews with him that were used for the documentary Herman's House. And I was able to steep myself in his voice to create this incredible character, played by Stephen Anthony Jones. Unforgettable performance by all these actors.
If there was... one thing you could, I mean, I'm sure there's lots of things that you sort of, in your research for the play, that most affected you, what was that?
I mean, I think the experience of going to these small towns around the country that, you know, sometimes I rented a car, drove through snowstorms, snaked through Redwood Forest up to Pelican Bay. You get to these pristine little towns with their, you know, snow-capped church steeples, and you get inside these places, and I met with people in cages, you know, feeding them Reese's from the vending machines. It's like a gulag in there. And it's really, really eerie to experience that over and over again, that this is happening right in people's backyards and they don't even see it.
So people need to be more aware of what's going on inside prisons.
People need to go in there.
We have a prison fairly near here called San Quentin, everybody.
Word, yeah, seriously. That's one of the reasons, you know, the idea of, you know, creating a play is to be able to have somewhat of a visceral experience of entering that. And people have said that you walk into the stage at Z-Space and it's just palpable, the tension. I mean, it's like an insane asylum. We have actual footage that was recorded inside a solitary confinement pod, the soundscape, all of it really brings it to life.
Wow. And, okay, so this is my last question. I'll let you guys go. What do you guys do for fun? I feel like it's like you both sort of work in a similar industry. I'm sure there's a lot of prison talk. What'd you do today? Well, I was hanging out with a guy in solitary confinement for 19 hours. Well, I was an inmate. How do you get away from that? How do you disconnect from that?
I love how people always think that we just like wallow in darkness.
I just hear a lot of Morrissey playing in the background. Yeah. All black curtains.
We just only listen to Black Sabbath at home.
Black Sabbath. So what do you do?
Don't we do for fun? I mean, we go dancing.
Play Pokemon really Go.
No.
No. Not me. No.
Well, thank you for coming today. I appreciate it. We'll bring you guys out later. Thank you for coming. Give it up, everybody, for Shane Bauer and Sarah Shord. And I want you all to help me to welcome back our awesome panel, Irene Tu, Jamie DeWolf, and Nikki Jones. All right, let's check in again with Becca at the social media desk. Becca, what's Twitter saying right now?
Hi again. We got Kasim Bentley, another former guest of the show. If hot, innocent Asian women started getting shot by the police, white guys are going to be in the streets ready to die like it's Braveheart.
Not if they look like me, though.
Oh, Kasim Bentley, will you ever quit? No, you won't. That's amazing.
At Patrick Easton, just took the white trash cans to the curb for Friday pickup. One problem solved.
Is it that they're white that is part of it? Is that what a part of it is there? I guess you gotta think globally, act locally. So if you can get the trash out, that's good for you.
Have a question. Hopefully Nikki can answer this one from at Fitz the Reporter. How should community respond to SFPD capturing a black, maybe mentally ill gunman alive this month? I'm not entirely sure that deserves a lot of kudos.
Yeah.
Need some elaboration there. And so is the idea that if it happens once, then it can happen again. It's possible, right? Yeah. I mean, and so I should say, you know, to say, you know, what do people want from the police? They want to not get shot. Right.
Yes.
And so in this case, you know,
I mean, I feel
shot,
like it is a case that, like, people sometimes, we don't celebrate when the cops do good things. It's like when I go to Starbucks, I don't go, yay, my mocha, yay. If it's your job to do to do good deeds, then do good deeds. Yeah. Anything else we got, Becca? Here we go.
At the Re-Lion Truth, what if the snipers got paid vacay and no charges like these killer cops after they murder innocent black and brown folk? Instead of, you know, getting blown up by robots, that was pretty hardcore.
Yeah, blown up by robots. Did anybody hear that? Nikki, Professor Jones, that seems like, I'm just talking, that seems like the end of, that seems like, and to Jamie, that seems like the end of days.
Yes,
when
for
when
sure.
They send the robot with the bomb to go get you, that seems like the end of days.
That's the first time I heard about that happening in a domestic context in policing.
What's terrifying is living in Oakland with all the protests that have gone on. You see the latest, like, Robotech stuff they wheel out that I haven't even heard of that are, like, crazy new cop vans with all these, like, gun tourists where you – I mean, it's just, like, Oakland is a new laboratory that they're testing out technology, and it would – I mean, it scares me that they might have these bomb robots already ready – some warehouse off San Pablo right now, you know?
I mean, just something to keep in mind while you're playing Pokemon Go with your GPS on.
Also, I want to say the robots, it was sad because the robots kind of look like Wally.
Wally. Yeah.
Are you feeling sorry for the robot or...
No,
or
it was,
Wally?
I don't know. Design flaw? I'm not sure. A lot of feelings.
Is it time for, is that it? Is that the show, everybody? We have so much we could talk about, but thank you, everybody. That's our show, everybody. This has been a big one. This has been a rough one. Thank you for being here. I want to thank our wonderful guests once again, Irene Tu, Jamie DeWolf, Nikki Jones, Shane Bauer, and Sarah Shord. Thank you to Whole Foods Market for feeding our staff and guests. Thank you to James Rollins and Marco Martin, and to the New Parish for hosting us. And thank you to Oaklanders for free t-shirts. The Come Out Right Now team is Ted Muldoon, Dan Brandon, Jeremy Dolmas, Becca Hoekstra, Phil Circus, Max Jacobs, and Matt Martin. Music by Martin Luther. Come Out Right Now is a production of KALW. For those in the audience, stay with us. We got more coming up. If you're on the radio, you can catch the rest of the podcast. So go subscribe to Come Out Right Now, right now. I'm Debbie Come Out Bell. Thank you so much, and good night. This ain't no home.